it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Okwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all the better for seeing you, Musa.
Oh my God. Oh no.
Because why are you laughing at me?
Because I do that all the time and now I know how it feels.
Yeah, so it's not nice, is it? No, just because we're recording this a lot later than usual. We're on Tuesday and it feels like I haven't seen you for ages. How are you?
You know, when you start the year really fast and you just hit a wall, I did that the last couple of days. If I'm honest.
Too many books.
Some writing, actually. Yeah, some writing. You know, like you just, I was like, wow, okay, your body is like, okay, man, just step back a bit. So I'm doing that. But yeah, otherwise I'm good, man. I'm good.
Nice. We hope everyone else is staying safe, staying well, wherever you are. A couple of bits of admin. The reason this is coming to you on a Tuesday was because I was on Wrighty's house yesterday with Carl. Ian and Vilile returned to talk about some AFCON stuff, which was great. Right. But Stadio wouldn't have gone up until during the Brentford Man City game. So we thought we'd hold it till today so we could talk about that, just in case there was a shocking result in the title race. And in true fashion, there wasn't. But if we had gone yesterday, then you'd sure as hell know that Brentford would have won that game.
That's true.
So, exactly. Sorry, Brentford fans, that's on us.
It's on us, yeah.
But yeah, so go check that. Carl, Ian and I talked a lot about Arsenal's win over Liverpool. We're going to talk a little bit about that today as well. Yeah, we also talked about Manchester United's win, some other stuff in the Premier League. And yeah, Carl, Ian and Vilile had a good chat about the AFCON quarterfinals and looked ahead to the semi-finals. Also go check Counterpressed. They talked about West Ham's win over Arsenal in the WSL.
Yeah,
and a lot of other stuff from the WSL weekend. But yeah, today we're going to kind of just wrap up some games that we caught and we were talking about throughout the weekend. And I think that'll do us for today.
Yep.
All right, let's get into it.
Do it.
All right, man. So Manchester City beat Brentford 3-1 at the G-Tech Community Stadium.
They did.
It means that, well, depending on who you speak to, there's a 3-horse title race. Villa fans will say that there's a 4-horse title race.
That's fair. They can say that.
Spurs fans, legitimately as well, could say that there's a 5-horse title race because 7 points back in February is nothing.
Right.
However, most people seem to think there's only really a 2-horse title race because Manchester City's game in hand, if they win that, they will go 1 point clear at the top of the Premier League.
Still plenty to go, though.
There is plenty of time to go. And I think it felt like quite a big weekend in the Premier League title race. I mean, quickly on Man City, a hat-trick for Phil Foden.
They were just so good, City, at stretching the play. The first goal, the way it came on the angle, they switched from left to right and De Bruyne hit the crossfield passing. And it was all angles, like, you know, a poor clearance or, well, a difficult clearance. And Brentford were just absorbing so much pressure and the ball falling to Foden for the 1-0. And it was just, I think each goal was like that. It was just Brentford being pulled left, right. And you know, their game plan was obviously very sort of Atletico Madrid style, absorb pressure, counter punch. Mm. And that actually That approach would have worked against almost any other club in the division. And to their credit, I mean, if they'd held them out, I still think City would have won, but I would have been fascinated to see what happens if they get to half-time at 1-0. That would have been really interesting, I think.
Brentford taking the lead with Nil Mopay after 21 minutes, which was a great goal, actually. Well-worked goal. Nice little screen.
Ivan Toney pinning, yeah, loved that. Loved that.
But Brentford were very, very, very kind of like under siege a lot in that first half as well.
They were, they were.
Duncan Alexander said, 3% of the saves Brentford goalkeepers have ever made in the Premier League came in the first half last night.
I love stats. Like, Duncan is he's too funny. He's so funny. He's so good.
I mean, which was a sign of, you know, how much Mark Flecken was kind of, how busy Mark Flecken was.
He was excellent.
Although there were periods in that first half where I think I texted you saying that 5 minute spell from Brentford was kind of unbelievable.
There about 40 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, there were a mixture of corner routines that Brentford circulated possession, kept hold of the ball, and just some of the football on display from both sides, actually. I mean, bearing in mind, obviously, the huge, huge, huge gap in resources.
Mm.
Kind of a good sign of where the Premier League, I mean, not a good sign, but it's a sign of, you know, how deep the Premier League goes, because you've got Brentford playing some stuff that I think would have been, you know, those little kind of like viral videos that get sped up and be like, this is what Thomas Frank has got Brentford doing. If he was actually at like, I don't know, like Wolfsburg or something like that, right, or Werder Bremen. And some of those little corner routines I thought was just really interesting. Nice to see. It felt like a little firework display.
You almost see them peel off one by one. You're right. It's like they get in that corner and they're like, okay, here's our box of tools. We've planned for this. We plan to absorb pressure for half an hour. We'll get into their final third. And then we're going to be in their final third for 3 minutes. And here's all the stuff we're going to try. So Brentford were the only team to beat City home and away last year.
Yeah.
And you can see that from the quality of the coaching. Like, I love games like this where the coaching by Thomas Frank is so good that it narrows the gap between the teams. And each team has to be, you know, City had to be at their best. And the funny thing about Erling Haaland being kept fairly quiet is that I thought this is so funny because Erling Haaland is actually maybe the most Brentford striker in the Premier League in terms of his directness. So effectively, the Brentford defenders train against him every week. Like, the kind of problems that he presents for, you know, the directness of his play, the kind of problems he presents are the type that they see in training all the time. And, you know, we've said this about Haaland before, like, what a great player is. You just have to, like, swarm the guy. Pep said it, like, you have six players in and around a 3 meter space. What can a player do in that? And actually, the credit to Haaland is the only supervision I've seen heavier than this was, I think it was Jamal Musiala. There was a game Jamal Musiala was playing this season where there's like six players around him. And it was like, this man got executive supervision. He was really good in drawing people out of position, and I thought Foden was obviously excellent.
Botwell posted a thing saying that Phil Foden's hat trick was scored off 0.68 XG.
Wow.
Getting Haaland back now and getting De Bruyne back recently and playing with an air of almost like expectancy.
Mm.
And I think it was probably why I feel like the Arsenal-Liverpool game felt so big.
It was huge. And also now a game where you've beaten both Liverpool and Man City at home. Like, those things are psychologically important, not just in terms of the points.
Yeah, there were loads of absences for Liverpool and they didn't get the rub of the green in certain decisions. I said on Righty's House that, for example, I know Darwin Nunez got booked for his reaction to the non-call on Gabriel, but I think Gabriel should have been booked. I think that should have been called a foul. Gabriel should have been booked and Gabriel should have been sent off, especially after you sent Konate off.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it would have happened or if it would have impacted the game massively at that stage because it was quite late.
Mm.
You know, obviously the absentees, like we mentioned in detail on Righty's House, and I think that, for example, obviously Conor Bradley missing because of the really, really sad passing of his father.
Yeah. Young too.
And while obviously Trent is amazing, Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't fully fit yet. And I think just in terms of a matchup, the athleticism of Conor Bradley, I think would have been really handy to have for Liverpool down that right-hand side against Martinelli. Yeah, for sure. And there was just way too much space down that left-hand side. I'm wary of repeating myself because obviously I was on Righty's House with Carl and Ian.
Mm.
But I want to kind of go through the game with you because I feel like, you know, it's been nearly 48 hours now. And, but you know, there was a lot of buzz around this game.
Mm.
So, I mean, I want to kind of break it down. Like, so Arsenal had that breakaway early on, which I think kind of gave Liverpool a bit of a scare where they had the Raya throw out down the left-hand side.
Martinelli sprint, yeah, the foot race. Martinelli foot race with Konate. Mind-blowing.
Crosses it in for Saka, who probably should have done better, actually.
Yeah, should have scored that. Because if you look at the angle of Saka's run as he's coming in, he's watching Martinelli sprint. Mm. And he's actually coming in quite, it's his perfect run. Like, he's actually coming in quite wide. He's not coming in narrow. So he's got a really good view of not only the run Martinelli's making the ball, but also the goal. So, you know, he should have scored that, I'm honest. Yeah.
But it didn't matter.
No, it didn't. It didn't. Because the goal that Arsenal scored was even better than that one. That's one of the goals in context. That is one of the team goals of the season.
The first one?
If you look at, yeah, the first Arsenal goal, Saliba's being hunted down on the press, switches play, and then within, 15 seconds, it's in the Liverpool net.
Yeah, that Odegaard pass that just...
All of it. The Odegaard pass, but even before that, the kind of cat's cradle pass, in and out, Zinchenko squaring, and then the pass on by Odegaard, and Havertz's movement into space. Just all of that was brilliant. And then Saka following up really well. That goal, it was not talking about in comparison with Wenger's Arsenal, but actually it would not have been out of place with Pete Wenger's Arsenal, to be honest.
What was your take on the rest of the first half? Because I thought Arsenal didn't feel like they were in a huge amount of danger, really.
They weren't, but that was also dangerous in its own way because it felt a bit like the first half at Anfield. Yeah. We
were actually talking about it in the group, weren't we? We were saying like they need to capitalize on these chances.
Totally, where, you know, Anfield could have been 2-3-0 at half time. Same again in this game, could have been 2-0 at half time, and they didn't quite press for the second or get the second. And the goal they conceded actually was very demoralizing. Like, to concede a goal like that, I was really impressed actually with Arsenal's recovery from that, because having scored a goal, such a great goal, then having conceded one that was really so mediocre by Arsenal's standards on the stroke of half time. It says a lot for Arsenal's mentality like that. And the fact they recovered so well from that. I mean, I know Liverpool had a very good period just after half time.
Yeah, they're best of the game, I thought, right?
Fundamentally, Arsenal, they regrouped really, really well. And you said to me, it was funny, you were like, they were going to score, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to score. We knew Liverpool were going to score at some point.
Yeah.
I think that was the key moment the key period of the game from the goal going in just before half time to maybe 5 to 10 minutes into the second half, where Liverpool had those couple of chances, which weren't great chances, but they...
No.
Look, the atmosphere went very, very flat.
Yeah, Curtis Jones hit one wide and opened up for him. Yeah, yeah.
And the atmosphere at the beginning of the game was very raucous and very loud. And actually, it's been something that Arsenal have struggled to achieve this season based on, especially in the aftermath of last season, I think, because last season, this has all been done to death. But, you know, the fact that it took everyone by surprise and there was this big wave of momentum and then, the expectation this season, I think, has made it nervy in patches at Arsenal. And I think at the beginning of the game, it felt like, or it came across on TV anyway, that it was as loud as I can remember it. But that goal just before half time and that nervy period in the beginning of the second half was really worrying because it felt like it was very quiet. That Arsenal side of the first half, an hour of the first half, seemed to have just vanished temporarily.
Yeah, because people are remembering previous collapses.
Yeah, but they started to play themselves back into it, and then they have the second goal. Well, actually, just before we move on to the second goal, who do you think it was at fault for the first, for the Liverpool goal?
Hard to say, because the ball comes in from Gravenberch, doesn't it? And then Saliba kind of loses it. I think he loses the flight of it. So it goes in off of Gabriel, but I think it's Saliba, if anyone.
Tim Stillman said something quite interesting on Arsenal Vision podcast about how it was hard to grasp just how windy it was.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he wonders whether that's why maybe you saw two very, very, very good centre-backs make two very, very, very uncharacteristic errors.
Well, then in that case, you're going to blame the goalkeeper, because the goalkeeper can see everything. If it's wind and you've got centre-backs retreating, see Alisson, it was actually great that Van Dijk took all the blame for that goal. But interestingly enough, when he comes for it, Alisson can see everything. He can see the ball dropping towards him and how much it's moving. He can see Van Dijk. So actually, in that situation, you might say Raya, because Raya has to make an instruction. Because you've got an elite winger basically all over the back of you in Saliba. He's got Diaz coming after him. So maybe Raya needs to be more assertive. I don't know. But I mean, luckily they, regardless of who takes the blame for that, they regrouped in a way that has not been associated with Arsenal in the last couple of years. And I was extremely impressed. Because you concede a goal like that, and then you come back and win with a couple of goals to spare. So obviously, like the mix.
Just
up
on
between,
that, by the way, I still think that Saliba should just clear. Because
yeah, I think so.
I think it just eliminates any potential error from that. And I think Van Dijk, maybe as soon as it bounces, he then just Alisson needs to actually drop, and Van Dijk just heads it back. But I think Saliba one, I said on Wright's house, if someone like Cedric had made that error, then everyone would be going after Cedric. But I think because it's William Saliba and he's got so much credit in the bank, and we forget that he's 22 years old, you're kind of like, it must be Raya's fault. It must be Raya's fault. But I mean, the one for Martinelli, I also said on Wright's house that I don't think that goal happens if it's Havertz, because you kind of know where Havertz is all the time. Whereas Martinelli almost orbits you, and it can be really hard to track. So it's just he is the worst person for Liverpool. He's the worst person that you want in that position.
Mm.
And then he gets taken off, which in hindsight, I think was actually down to fatigue. Trossard comes up.
He was spectacular. He was absolutely spectacular, Martinelli. Just to say that quickly, like, the way that he hunted the spaces in behind Trent. Konate is not slow, but that foot race will be an iconic moment. If he'd scored that goal, if Saka scored that goal, that sprint would have been an iconic moment, because that's what Mal Hunter can do from a very early stage in the game. No surprise that he was knackered, but what a great tool to have off the bench in Trossard.
Yeah, I mean, dude, like this guy. He had one chance before that as well, I think, or he had one run down that left-hand side.
Mm.
But this just felt like a very Trossard goal. Yeah. In the sense, there's nothing on. If you stop the video when he picks up the ball, it's just Liverpool players, basically.
Right. And then he sees the gap in between Elliot and absolutely burns him. And then, like, the guts to go alone reminded me of, like, sort of peak Pedro at Barcelona. The guts to be like, yeah, I'm going to handle this myself.
Yeah,
and
like
then got rewarded for his bravery by, you know, thrash it towards goal. And then Van Dijk again, maybe slightly at fault with the deflection between Alisson's legs. I mean, maybe it's nitpicking, but Van Dijk, if we're going to criticise anyone, I don't think it's Alisson in that case. I think that Alisson is his responsibility for the goal before.
Yeah.
But, you know, Van Dijk made an effort, got deflected, and that was it. And the margin was one that Arsenal deserved, a 3-1. What do you think of the Konate red? Klopp wasn't thrilled about it.
I think the first one's soft. It's probably technically, and I'm putting that word in italics, but it's technically a yellow. I think just because of the position of the pitch as well. I think once you've got the first one, the second one, I'm less...
Strictly speaking, it was a body check. I mean, Klopp wasn't the most pleased about it, but I could see why it was one. It wasn't the most dangerous area because that was a tactical foul because Havertz was about to start the counter. I don't know, slightly. Konate didn't really appeal it too much. I think he kind of knew what was up.
Yeah, the second one, I think he knew. But that's what I said before. Like, I think that's why Anthony Taylor, having sent Konate off, needs to blow for the foul on Gabriel and actually do the same.
Yeah, that's fair.
But Liverpool didn't lose the game because of that red card, I don't think.
No, they didn't.
And also, I don't think Klopp even suggested that. To be fair, in his post-match interview, he didn't really seem to bring it up until he was pushed on it. He was very complimentary about Arsenal, saying one of those days where you don't really play that well. Maybe that's on you. Maybe that's on the opposition. Maybe that's down to all of the circumstances as well in terms of team selection. And actually not get too carried away about it. It was a huge game for both sides, but I don't think that Liverpool need to get too introspective on the defeat.
I think that's right.
One of those games where it's going to sting because you've obviously, you know that any points dropped in this title race against a side like City is going to, that's what, you saw it last season when Arsenal started to wobble. You knew how important or how potentially catastrophic any drop points could be.
Yeah.
The biggest testament I would say to Arsenal is that actually I think they stopped Liverpool. We've seen Liverpool, even with absences or rotation this season, still play in a very Liverpool way.
Yeah.
And I think Arsenal, they look very assured against sides like Liverpool, whereas in the past, they would just completely fall apart.
Totally. They hunted them in the build-up. You watched how they pressed so high up. Odegaard taking very advanced positions. Rice was outstanding. Jorginho even better. It was almost like...
Havertz as well, to be fair.
Havertz with Havertz's movement. I mean, the only sort of blemish was not scoring the chance he went through on, but it still fell to Saka. But Havertz throughout created a lot of space for Saka to get in behind and to feed on the spaces. There's a lot of that going on. Martinelli was, you know, my favorite player on the pitch, was exceptional just because the directness, the aggression, hunting spaces. And Arsenal were just, I mean, some of the play as well, some of Zinchenko's build-up was excellent too. I just, if you look at those three games they've played, the FA Cup, the game at Anfield, and this one as well, Arsenal have been the better side, I would argue, for like four or five out of the six halves in those games. In terms of the quality, that's really, really big for Arsenal because, you know, there's a lot of talk on social media, but also maybe with the club about, are we at the level? But they absolutely are in that company now. They are still very much a contender. And if City drop in, the problem with City is it's hard to see where the points are going to be dropped, but Arsenal are right there. And I think Liverpool's reaction, particularly the reaction of a couple of prominent pundits, I think that was quite revealing, actually. I think that was a big giveaway. Like, stepping away from all the jokes and the banter, I think this was a moment of... But I think Arsenal give Liverpool a lot of anxiety, actually.
Yeah, especially... I was listening to the Anfield rap yesterday just to kind of get a Liverpool perspective on this. And I mean, as ever, they were great, those guys. Mm. And they were just more... Yeah, kind of just saying that even with the... With Liverpool not getting the rub of the green or certain decisions going against them in certain ways, then they still just didn't deserve to win the game. And but I think in terms of it being this big symbolic moment, I think you sometimes just have to chalk this down to being like, you know, this isn't a Mickey Mouse game.
Yeah.
Not having Salah, not having Szoboszlai, not only having like Thiago being able to come on for like a few minutes and looking like he struggled with that, not being able to play Trent for a full half, not having Connor Bradley, not having the, you know, being able to start Darwin Nunez from the start, which I think would have caused Arsenal a lot of problems, actually. Mm. Because I just think that element of chaos that he brings to that back four, I think despite Liverpool getting a couple of moments, especially in that early stage in the second half, I think you saw the potential Darwin effect in Havertz the other way, actually. I think he occupied that back four to such a degree that I think he played a major role in the cause of those errors that led to the goals.
The Darwin effect sounds like, you know, a research project in Switzerland or something, doesn't it?
It sounds like the new Christopher Nolan movie.
No, but joking aside, you make a great point. In terms of his effect on a back four, I think he is uniquely destabilizing, to your point.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So Liverpool have got a quite winnable run of fixtures coming up, I think. You know, they've got Burnley at home. They go to Brentford, which will be tricky, but I still think they can win that game, obviously. They host Luton. They have the Carabao Cup final. Then they've got an FA Cup tie against Watford or Southampton. They go to Forest and then they host City.
Love that.
It's the Liverpool game against City and it's Arsenal going to City. Because I think if Liverpool or Arsenal have any hope of winning the league...
They need those points, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But who knows? City might win both those games and we might all be being like, oh, City have won the league by 8 points.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's exciting again.
Chalk it up. Let's go. We go again next year. We go again. Manchester United beating West Ham 3-0. I just want to get your thoughts on this because we spoke about this on Wright's House as well. I also wanted to get your thoughts on the other games that we've made.
Gorgeous goal by Hoyland. Who is just a lovely player. He is, and it's just that thing about like not having scored in the Premier League. He'd scored a load in the Champions League. That always felt like a strange stat to me. That, oh, he can't
scored in the Premier League now.
Yeah, but he's...
A few times.
If you give him chances, or just... Actually, not even that. If you put him in good positions, he'll do his own work. He doesn't need that much maintenance, Hoyland. And those games he wasn't scoring were always a reflection more on the quality of play around him. So yeah, he got a great goal there. A couple of goals for Garnacho, nice finishes for them. And that front three, Rashford, Hoyland, Garnacho, it's pretty useful. And a really good win, that, actually. That's... 3-0 over West Ham isn't, you know, it's not small beer as wins go. And yeah, so they've now had, what, the back-to-back, the Luton game and the West Ham game. Two decent results there. I mean, I still can't work out what's happening at United. I just still don't know from game to game what's going to turn up. But there is a resilience there. There is a certain team spirit. And Rashford, I think, is again as well. All the negative headlines recently, another strong performance from him. So yeah, United... moving on nicely.
Manchester United were wearing armbands and had a minute's silence before the game because it's actually today, the 66th anniversary of the Munich air disaster.
Yeah. For those, I mean, obviously, like, listeners will know, on the 6th of February, 1958, 8 Manchester players were killed in a plane crash along with 15 others. Bobby Charlton, of course, who's dearly departed, Sir Bobby Charlton, survived that and went on to win the European Cup, as it then was. And Sir Matt Busby was at the helm of that team. But yeah, it's one of those tragedies that still remains at the heart of the club. And as always, those players are fondly remembered. Lots of talk about Duncan Edwards, who could have become one of the greatest of all time if he'd survived. So yeah, time for reflection, but a really beautiful tribute. That's the thing that United, you know, they, not a criticism of the club, but they always nail that, to be honest. They always do right by that.
Let's go to Stamford Bridge. Wolves beating Chelsea. A hat-trick for Mateus Cunha. Check this stat out, Musa. This is from Opta. Mateus Cunha is only the 4th visiting player to score a Premier League hat-trick against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
The 4th.
Can you name the other 3?
I can't, actually.
Check this out for company. Kanu, Van Persie, Aguero.
That is nuts. Yeah, of course, the famous Kanu one.
Yeah. Still one of my favourite Arsenal goals.
Van Persie in the 5-3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When he just ran them ragged. Yeah, okay, yep. I remember that now. John Terry was looking 10 years older in that one.
He was also looking up at Van Persie running away as he was laying on the deck. But
that's,
you know,
true. I remember that well. It's coming back now, but I don't remember the Aguero one. I think just very quickly, just when you think Chelsea have taken it somewhere, a result of that comes along and you realise, no, they're actually in complete disarray.
Yeah.
It's wildly fluctuating form. I'm not sure they know what they are. I certainly don't know what they are. And it was really concerning. It was 4-1, to be honest, at one point. It could have been more. The Chelsea just looking unrecognisable week to week.
I referred to Mateus Cunha as a Hertha BSC legend on Wright's House.
Of course you did.
Staying on brand.
Always.
In other news, your nuclear sandstorm moved north over the weekend.
Extremely disrespectful, yes.
Football past Newcastle at St James's Park and ended up drawing the game 4-4.
They have been, this again, it always sounds patronising when you praise teams for games in which they don't win, but they have always been, they haven't been losing games like Sheffield United have been losing games. They've been extremely aggressive, and the thing that's characterised their players, they've taken the approach of teams that, how to put this best, they did the out-Arsenaled Arsenal in that game against Arsenal, and they went to Newcastle and they behaved with the same disrespect. I mean, they went right to that house. A bit like AC Milan did, to be honest. They went in there, acted like they owned it. And it was so impressive. That stadium, that crowd, to get 4-2 up was remarkable. And Newcastle just had too much. This is the thing. I think it's easy to look at that game and be like, oh, it's 2 points dropped. But, dude, that last 20, Newcastle were absolutely... They were brutal in the last 20. They fully deserved those 2. See, a great point for Luton. And now they've got, they're just 1 point clear of the relegation zone with the game in hand. Not the worst position to be in.
All right, should we take a quick break and then talk about a couple of derbies?
Yeah, let's do it.
Should we go Serie A?
I think we should.
Derby d'Italia this weekend at San Siro. Inter beating Juve 1-0.
Handled them.
If it wasn't for Wojciech Szczesny, it could have been a lot more. We're actually going to spend the next hour talking about Hakan Çalhanoğlu's pass.
Yes. Yes.
It was like watching a Tiger Woods stinger.
Yes, a 2-iron.
Just pew.
So clean.
Everyone would have seen it by now because it's done the rounds. But
I love this Inter team. I love this Inter team.
Can I confess though, at first when I saw that pass, I thought it was Ben Pavard.
He's looking happy.
He is. He tried that overhead kick. He tried to claim the overhead kick assist. Anyway, Inter winning 1-0 and handling, like you mentioned, Juve.
Comfortable.
Let's talk about Inter and let's talk about Simone Inzaghi, because it's a very different Inter to the side that won the title. I think it's a more well-rounded Inter. Mm.
They're looking even better than the team that got to the Champions League final.
They are.
Which is saying something. You look, I mean, that combination, the way that Lautaro and Thuram are combining is outstanding. And what I love about Marcus Thuram is there are some players that can play wide, but don't like wingers. Marcus Thuram genuinely looks like a winger when he's playing wide, and genuinely looks like a centre forward when he's central, taking up space. Really aggressive, really impressive. Pavard coming in, and that is a move that he agitated for a long time. You see exactly now why he wanted to move so badly. And him there is just, I mean, look, Pavard, Acerbi, Bastoni is a mean, that is a mean back three. And then DeMarco, just brilliant out wide, just absolutely exceptional in that role, like loving, in his, deep in his bag.
Mm.
And Damian having the sort of the late career resurgence, which is really great to watch. They're just so solid, that midfield as well. Everything, every part of it fits. There's just no, it's like listening to, you know, those, you know, like a lot of those artists have started to release these like really stripped back 20 minute albums, like Vince Staples. It's like a Vince Staples album. There's like no filler. There's absolutely everything in the Inter team is exactly where it needs to be. And Simone Inzaghi as a coach, we were talking about this the other day. I just think he's a bit underrated still.
Yeah, I do.
There's something of the Ancelotti about him actually.
Mm.
Like he doesn't demand the attention. So people don't, they look at him and go, oh, is he that tactical? Is he doing that much? That guy's record is something else, man. Genuinely, absolutely brilliant manager.
Yeah, I think that they've got this really good blend of kind of, I don't know, it's like, it's almost like guts and grit and a bit of glam as well.
Mm.
You know?
Right, it's almost like they can play, we can have none of the ball or all of it.
Yeah.
And we're equally comfortable. We're equally comfortable having 20% possession or 70. We don't mind.
Yeah, and I think that you can see that with players like, I mean, you look at how Henrik Mkhitaryan is playing, for example.
I love that.
In the midfield, like that midfield, you know, if you include Damian at right wing back, DeMarco, Mkhitaryan, Çalhanoğlu, it doesn't feel like it's weighted. I suppose what I'm saying is it's really balanced. It doesn't feel weighted in any one direction. It feels very flexible. They can ramp up the technical aspect of it if they want to. Like that team that won the Scudetto, it felt like it was very kind of, it had to go, there was a direction of that the flow had to go in. And if it didn't work, then they kind of like, they came unstuck a little bit,
like,
which they did the season after.
It was like early Arteta at Arsenal when there was always that one kind of goal they would score, like the right to left.
Mm.
It was like, because that was the one way to break teams down. But this now, they have so many more tools now. They're much more dangerous. And you see Lautaro is enjoying that. Like he's a great strike partner. He's had Dzeko before, Lukaku and Thuram he's played alongside. In many ways, Thuram may be the best so far.
Mm.
In terms of the unpredictability of the front line, like, you know, when you're playing alongside Lukaku or Dzeko, you kind of know where the thrust is going to come from. You know who's going to be the furthest forward at certain points. But with Thuram there, it's just this great thing of creating space because he's such a goal threat, Thuram. But also he can defer when he needs to, he can pull wide. So yeah, I think this Inter team is just one of my favourites. Like in terms of, not sort of rank where they are in Europe, but I'm really looking forward to seeing them in the Champions League, to be honest.
Mm.
They could go deep again.
The calm, patient presence of Inzaghi, I think, in that dugout, even under pressure and even under criticism, has been a major, major factor in Inter evolving. Or like evolving post-Conte.
His big game, his big game performance is almost unrivaled at Inzaghi. There's very few coaches that could have gone toe-to-toe with City like did in that final. Yeah, like really impressive. The only thing he's got, the only challenges for him is Mkhitaryan's getting a bit older. He's 35 now, so it's summer. There's a couple of questions this summer about reinforcements, but Inter as a destination is a dream. You know exactly what you're playing in the system. And it's very rarely you see a genuine 3-5-2 where the three midfielders are quite level in terms of you haven't got Mkhitaryan wildly advanced. There's a lot of defensive work for a player of that technical ability. It's just so solid. And I love watching it.
So Inter are now 4 points clear at the top of the game with the game in hand.
Really tidy. Still a way to go, but that goal difference is brutal.
I don't think I can see anyone overhauling them. The next game is a really, really massive game. They go to the Stadio Olimpico to play Roma, who have won three straight under Daniele De Rossi, which has been, I'm not going to lie, I'm really, really impressed with, because I wondered whether, I mean, I'm not entirely sure if long-term this is going to be an appointment, but there seems to have been a bit of what's the word? The players seem to have been freed up a little bit, even though I think they've been particularly tricky games. If you think they've played three of the bottom four in his first three games in charge, which I think has been a kind,
handled them though. Yeah,
yeah, he has. It's been a kind kind of intro to management there. Yeah. But Roma doing unbelievable under him so far. It's a big game for Inter because they should on paper win that, but you never know, the De Rossi factor might play into it. It's a massive home game. It's his biggest game since he's been there as manager.
Box office.
Yeah. Any other shout outs in Serie A while we're here?
No, I think we're good. We're good.
Yeah.
No other major dramas.
Oh, actually, I just want to shout out Bologna's win over Sass because that was a great game. 4-2.
I love Xerxes, man. I love what he's doing over there.
Yeah. And just Lewis Ferguson behind him, just pulling the string.
We love to see it.
All right, we're going to the Madrid derby. Real Madrid won, Atletico Madrid won.
Dare I say that Real Madrid effed around and found out?
Yeah, they really fucking did.
They did, didn't they? They really did, dude. Like, so Brahim Diaz breaking through to score, very much the energy of, okay, I'll do it myself. And I love Brahim Diaz as an option. You've got Gula there on the bench, so you've got threat for his position, but he seems like he's really happy at Madrid. I've got to say, if I'm going to be critical, the Rodrigo counterattack at 1-0.
Yes. Wait, should have squared it to Bellingham?
Dude, there were three options and he chose the worst possible. Yeah. Maybe three or four and he chose the worst one. He shot.
You know what? I did watch that and the first thing I thought was...
That's the moment.
Moose's Rodrigo agenda is...
The Rodrigo agenda.
It rides again.
It rides again. We ride at dawn. It was just this thing of... It felt like a moment. It felt like a moment. Brahim Diaz came close again with a gorgeous piece of skill. Almost scored a Florian Wirtz style goal.
Yeah, that was great.
Cut in from the right flank and put it just wide. But that wasn't the worst miss because of all he'd done before. The Rodrigo counterattack when he doesn't square but goes for it, that was the one. Because Atleti did that classic Atleti thing of being subpar, but you couldn't quite put them away. Saunigas popping up in a couple of dangerous positions and they just looked dangerous. But to concede like that right at the end, needless. And the thing, it almost felt until that equaliser, the late equaliser, it felt very much like Inter Juventus, where you had a team that was just vastly superior, could have been 2 or 3-0, and they were just, you know, Bellingham came off, the job was a job well done. Like him coming off was almost the sign that, yeah, we've handled this, get a bit of rest in. And so, needlessly throwing those points away. Needlessly.
What do you think of the disallowed goal? It was a Stefan Savage header, I think.
Yeah.
I can't remember who was offside.
I thought it was fair enough.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I thought it was fair enough, but it was controversial. But again, this game was not eventful until the closing seconds. It really wasn't.
You know what was quite interesting, actually, about both the Derby d'Italia and the Madrid Derby was that Juve could have very much got out of there with a draw as well, actually, because they had a couple of chances.
They did.
Big gaps between those sides, but yet the margins are always still so small.
The Mbappe news, you know, there's talk of Mbappe. I think ESPN reporting he's decided to go there in the summer. He's obviously get out of jail card. I mean, you look at the Real Madrid bench as well. You're just thinking,
is he going to be the nine then?
I think it works. I think as a nine because they'll just have him roaming, like just patrolling the front line by himself.
Bellingham playing a little deeper, late runs. Vinicius Junior left.
They'll make it work. Do you know what I think it will be? I think it'll be like an Henry style nine.
Yeah.
There's all this talk about, oh, he can't play central. He doesn't have to. Henry didn't play central. It's okay. It's calm.
Henry had Bergkamp.
I mean, he's got Bellingham.
True.
You know, actually, like in terms of, because the danger with Bellingham is as a finisher, obviously he's a different kind of passer and, you know, no one quite has a passing of Bergkamp, but the danger of those two in fairly central positions is you have to pick your poison. It's a horrible problem. Mbappe's dragging you everywhere and Bellingham's just jogging. And Bellingham's not even sprinting these days. It's like a panther. Walk through. The amount of times he's on a counterattack, you're like, everyone seems to be sprinting and Bellingham's just walking. Because he knows he's going to feed. But you see, games like this are where you think really Mbappe makes the difference, actually. Because they made, this was kind of the old Madrid of making very, very hard work of a game that should have been done by
Unless he did have the chances, though.
They had a surprising amount of possession.
Yeah.
Surprising amount of possession, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one is Real Girona.
Yes, this week.
That's big. Yeah, that's the big one.
In terms of big top of the table clash, because Real Madrid are 2 points clear at the top at the moment. Barcelona, meanwhile, got past Alaves away. 3-1 win there. Goals were Lewandowski, Gundogan and Vitor Roque. He had a bit of an eventful game, actually. He came off the bench on 59 minutes. He scored on 63. And then he got booked on 67. And then he was off on 72. It was basically like, it was...
My perfect game.
Your perfect game.
A 13-minute performance. It's actually, yeah, that's...
Do you think as he walked off, he just went, thanks very much, Alaves. You've been amazing. Good night.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to thank. That's going to go down at the end of the year as one of the most existential performances. Like, he got to feel everything, didn't he? He really got to feel everything.
Maybe it was just load management. He's only good for 15, but we've got no subs left, so you might as well just go out in a blaze of glory.
So good. So good.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No. Oh, there's a gorgeous piece, just a shout out to Sid Lowe in The Guardian, a great piece on the renaissance of Isco at Real Betis. A slight injury for Isco, but it was a great piece. And the reason I mentioned that article is because Isco comes out with something that's really, there's a real humility. He says, you know, actually, if you look at the coaches that I was playing under and I wasn't a starter, at a certain point, I've got to look at myself and blame myself. I'm accountable. He said a really fascinating thing. He said at Madrid, I acted like the victim, even though I wasn't. And I just thought, wow, what? It's very rare you have that level of honesty from an elite footballer who is still playing. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I should have done more with my talent. Because Isco was, I mean,
he was the 16, one, man.
The 16-17 season, Isco was lights out. Lights out. 15-16, 16-17. Yeah. It's just really refreshing to hear someone go, hands up. And it makes you really root for him. Do check out that piece if you get a chance. But yeah, shout out to Isco. And I hope he's hope his injury's not too bad and he recovers soon enough.
Just quickly in Liga, Lyon beat Marseille in the derby. Alexander Lacazette with the only goal. Lyon just still 1 point off the relegation playoff zone. They're 3 points ahead of Metz, who were in 16th. Lille beating Clermont-Foot and PSG won on Friday, I think they played, beating Strasbourg 2-1. On that, actually, can I just read out a thing from Lucas Manella, who got in touch and pulled me up on my French pronunciation? Which I'm surprised you didn't do, actually, because you're the French speaker out of the two of us.
Well, I mean, that's generous. But anyway, carry on.
So I always do this, though. I forget my kind of combinations in French. And so anyway, I pronounce... Con.
C-A-E-N. Con.
Yeah. Sorry, Lucas. You know that pronunciations are important to us. You know, like having lived in Germany and then knowing how German, like the one of the major tips when we started learning German was learn the alphabet and learn what the sounds of the combinations in the words are. Because German is amazing in the sense that if you know a combination, it will only ever be pronounced that way. So you could probably actually pronounce anything.
That is so interesting. That's how you learned. You know, it's so funny because I learned it more, I learned German in like the toolkit, like time, manner, place. You know, the one thing about learning German is it's one of those things where structurally, like, you know, that whole thing about time, manner, place. So you're very much, you can always find your way back even halfway through a sentence. You're like, that needs to go in that order. It's a really, it's an unusual language in that sense.
It was like, there's a, you know, you can start getting into the nerdy German jokes being like, what takes longer? You know, it's like a certain team to have a shot on target or you waiting for the verb when someone says because at the beginning of the German sentence because you have to wait right to the fucking end of that sentence.
Go get a coffee in between, yeah.
Exactly.
Miss out the adjectives, yep.
Yeah, which takes longer, an appointment at the Burger Amt or waiting for the verb at the end of the sentence?
Oh, there it is. Yeah. All the migration authorities. Anyway, sorry, moving on.
Thanks Lucas for pulling me up on my French pronunciation. Speaking of Germany, let's just do a quick roundup of the Bundesliga very quick. Dortmund drawing away at Heidenheim on Friday, which, to be honest, isn't a dreadful result. Heidenheim are pretty handy at home. Bayern beating Gladbach 3-1 on Saturday. Another goal from Harry Kane.
Good win for them.
Yes.
They made hard work of that. Gladbach kind of kingmakers, you know, with the 0-0 draw against Leverkusen the game before that. So really putting up some stiff opposition.
Yeah. Harry Kane on 24 goals so far this season, by the way.
Wild.
With how many games left they've got? They've got 14 games left. He could very much break the all-time Bundesliga record.
In his first season. Jesus.
Leverkusen still 2 points clear, but obviously, like you mentioned, because of that draw last week, this Saturday is Leverkusen-Bayern. Saturday evening. Top Spiel der Woche.
Two tabletop. Germany and Spain. Yep. That's wild, isn't it?
Oh, they should have moved like Liverpool City this weekend.
That'd be nuts.
Get it all going. Stuttgart won away at Freiburg. Interesting thing about this, did you hear Christian Streich talking about the kit selection?
No, no.
So Freiburg changed their the kit that they wore at home on the weekend. They usually play in red. Stuttgart's away kit is green. Christian Streich said that Freiburg were going to play in their white away kit because there's a player who had red-green colour blindness.
Wow.
Yeah. And the quote, Derek Ray wrote the quote, actually translated the quote on Twitter. Streich said, "It's just a very good idea to do this. We don't want someone playing the ball to our opponent and having them score a goal as the result."
I mean, fair enough.
Nice touch this, I think. Yeah. Just have that kind of awareness of
nice attention to detail,
difficulty differentiating between red and green. But Stuttgart did beat them 3-1, but Stuttgart are, you know, have been very, very impressive all season.
Yeah.
Freiburg go to Dortmund next weekend. Union losing 2-0 to Leipzig. They were down to 10 men as well. Christopher Trimmel got sent off.
You're not expecting points from that game, really?
No.
Not really.
No.
Not really.
The bad news for Union was that Köln beat Eintracht 2-0, which means they've closed the gap on them. But Union do have that rescheduled game against Mainz tomorrow.
Relegation six-pointer, as they say.
It's a big game tonight, man. Leverkusen against Stuttgart. And there's also Copa del Rey, Real Sociedad going to Mallorca. And you've got FA Cup as well this week.
God, the food, Jesus
FA Christ. Cup Sorry. Replays. The big one, though, is obviously tomorrow. Saarbrücken host Gladbach.
I love that so much. I love that.
And then you've got Atletico Madrid against Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey semi.
Spicy.
And the first legs of those this week. We'll talk about those on Thursday.
Also AFCON, Nigeria, South Africa.
Yes, you got the AFCON semi-finals.
Dude, there's going to be bragging rights aplenty in that.
Did you see the uncles
and aunties in the WhatsApp are going to be going absolutely wild over that.
Can we just actually, before we go, because we've not talked a lot of AFCON in here because we've done those bits on Righty's House. Mm. But has this been one of, if not the best international tournaments of the last however long?
I think it has. I mean, this is the thing, I feel a bit, you know, obviously I have my soft spot for Cape Verde. No disrespect to South Africa who went through against them on penalties, but I just love the way they've played the last two tournaments. So I would have liked to see them go through just because I love what they're doing. But yeah, in terms of this team, in terms of AFCON this time around, we've said that anyone that half steps goes out. And this is a classic example, completely new set of quarterfinalists.
Game in the tournament so far for me was Mali, Ivory Coast. Red cards and goals, man. That's all we want in football. I told you that's all we want. All right, everyone, we're going to get out of here. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Don't forget to check Righty's House and Counterpressed. Don't forget to check the Stadio Archers players on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on an absolute monster this episode. We're going to let it run a little bit longer because it's got an amazing switch up in there. Yeah, H2SO4 by the one and only Mad Professor. Anything you would like to add, Musok Wonga?
Nothing further, actually. Nothing further.
Lovely. All right, everyone. Have a lovely couple of days until we come and bother you again on Thursday.
See you then.